Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to Friday night's program. We're just testing our new live stream, video streaming, and apparently we're having some troubles with the sound, but that's all right. We'll get back to it. So, okay. Hey, welcome to tonight's program. 7 past the hour. As you know by now, Barack Obama has announced, and we're going to take some calls about this because I want to know what everybody thinks about this. Obama has sent all U.S. troops out of Iraq by the end of the year. He made this announcement. Now, of course, a lot of people now are criticizing it and saying, well, you know, this was planned all along, blah, 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 blah. The State Department says 16,000 civilian employees will stay there. That's the largest overseas operation since the end of World War II, according to the Washington Post. So the thousands of contractors and the State Department employees raised doubts in Washington as to whether the war effort is truly over. So we're going to go ahead and open up the lines. They're open now. So give us a call. I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. I was bopping around today. I don't know what I was doing, and had Sirius satellite radio on in the car. And all of a sudden, I hear this, and I thought, all right, what is this? And my first thought was, well, this should make the progressives in this country happy. That's one of the demands to one of the big failures that Obama has made himself famous for is not following through on his promise to get us out of these war zones. So one would think then, right, that this would be this would be great news. So let me know what you think. I was reminded earlier today of remember Bush landing on the deck of the aircraft carrier and the big sign, mission accomplished, and Bush coming out after he switched to civvies saying the war is over, or combat operations in Iraq are over. When was that? Was that in 2004? So it's been a very, as far as I'm concerned, a very confusing day. When asked if troops leaving Iraq would be redeployed to Afghanistan, State Department, was it a State Department spokesman? State Department spokesman, diverted the question to the Pentagon, but stressed that there are fewer U.S. troops overseas now than in recent years. Dennis Kucinich said, quote, "Today's announcement fails to acknowledge that we will simply be replacing one U.S. occupation with another, and it is the presence of armed U.S. contractors that is the problem." Kucinich went on to say, "It will continue to foment instability and violence in Iraq and the region. We need to get out now, not just trade uniforms and personnel. It is reasonable to ask whether the people of Iraq will notice any change." So, let's find out what you think. Derek is in New Mexico. Hey, Derek. Derek, is Derek there? Okay, let me put Derek on hold, and we'll come back. Clint in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Clint.
Hi, Mike. I haven't talked to you for quite a while.
No, you haven't. How you been?
Not too bad. I'm still waiting to get reemployed, but I just had to comment on this situation. It sounds like we're going back to the same thing with Bush, you know, or as Ann Richards said, way back in the Democratic Convention, this dog ain't going to hunt or whatever it was. It just sounds like more of the same rhetoric for me. Even though I'm very happy if the troops do come home, you know, because they do need to get out of there. But I'm also hearing things about that we've got some troops waiting in the wings in Kuwait to go into Iran, so that's kind of my fear about the whole thing.
You think possibly this is either deliberate or not deliberate enticement for Iran to make, you know, Iraq and Iran had that vicious war of attrition that went on for, what, 6 years? Millions of Iranians, literally millions of Iranians and Iraqis died in that at the beginning and through the middle of the 80s, 1980s. Do you think Iran will move to fill the vacuum that the United States is definitely going to lose, or the vacuum they're going to leave when they leave? Do you think Iran's going to make a move? Wouldn't that be stupid of Iran?
I really think that Iran doesn't want to get involved in anything because, you know, basically since Khomeini's time, they haven't really done anything against any of the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just the plot of, you know, whoever's running things that they want to encircle and get all the oil fields. You know, I remember the Project for a New American Century, and that's what's got me,
right,
you know, a little up in arms about things that it's... You know, I'd like to believe in Obama, but I still feel strongly about why I voted for Cynthia McKinney instead of mm-hmm. Obama in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Clint, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot, pal.
Yeah, take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Derek, are you there now?
I'm here.
Okay, hey, Derek.
Hey, you know what this is like? This is like a wife who keeps getting beaten, and then he's going to promise he'll never do it again. You know, and it's just when every time he gets everybody so upset and PO'd, he comes back with something like, oh, he's changing it, and things are going to get better, and this is the real Obama coming out. You know, it's just setting us up again for one more time, and you know what? I'm just, it's like...
Well, what when you say setting us up one more time, what do you mean?
Like with the troops, he always, you know, the same last two weeks, he did all those free trade agreements. The unions are pissed off, you know, and he's done this and that and everything else. And now he's hammering on the dispensaries out in California are colder. You know, they're giving them warning notices. They're sending IRS agents out there. These dispensaries in California can't even make deposits in the banks because they told the banks if they take their money that they're going to prosecute the banks. I mean, it's just a scramble. And then he turns out with this, you know, oh, we're going to bring the troops home by December. You know, and it's just, you know what? He's just, how can you trust him anymore?
So, okay, I hear what you're saying about that, and I don't trust him. But this announcement today, you see it as just
it's just one of his little tricks he ploys. You know, because we got 100 troops in Uganda the week and a half ago. I mean, okay, so he moves them out of Iraq, but guaranteed he's going to put something else somewhere else. I mean, you know, Libya, or just on and on and on. And the way then everybody's applauding about how Gaddafi got killed, like this, you know, the guy gave up, he put his gun down, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, and they think this is great. Oh, that they just murdered him and shot him in the head execution style.
You don't sound like a happy camper.
I'm not. And I haven't been. And you know what? These protests, you know, the march on Wall Street, we had march in El Paso. I'm up here in Rincon. We've even got them in TRC now. Little TRC, Truth or Consequences. I don't know if you know that area.
Oh, yeah.
The town, 8,000 people, and we got every Thursday we're out there on the triangle. And you know what? We need to take, you know what? We need to take this march right down Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's for sure. And it needs to.
And you know what? I really feel when that Kent State shot comes from, you know, I think it's going to come from him.
Yikes.
That's the sickest thing I can even think of, but I think when that shot comes, it's going to come from him because he's just all over the place.
All right. I hear you loud and clear. Derek, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. All right. Stick around. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Nope.
forget tonight how much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. All right, what we're talking about here is the announcement today by Barack Obama that U.S. troops, all U.S. troops out of Iraq by the end of the year, and what that means. And I'm just curious what you think, okay? I know that things are never what they seem to be in politics, especially where it concerns war and torture and bombing and withdrawals and troop deployments. The first casualty of war is the truth. And so, I don't know what to think. I hope that come the end of December, all U.S. troops are going to be out of Iraq. I think I hope that, because what happens once we're gone? The suicide bombing and the car bombings continue in Iraq, probably even as we speak. There are several religious minorities there who run the risk of being blown into pieces. So I don't know. This is the legacy, though, from the Bush crime family. It doesn't make any difference. In one sense, the word what Obama does, because this is something that he inherited from these criminals that are wandering around now on their book tours. So, whatever. What do you have to say? Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
First of all, I'll preface this by saying I agree totally with Dennis Kucinich, but I also get really aggravated hearing the Republican response.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? McCain, who seems to can't figure out that he lost the last election, came out today and said, oh, this is a strategic victory for our enemies in the Middle East.
Really? How and, so? Did he explain why he said that?
No, not that I heard anyway. I just heard the soundbite. And it just, I've heard several sound bites from several different Republicans today, and all of them are saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how Obama's making a big mistake, and how it's a strategic victory, and how we're betraying the people of Iraq, and blah, 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 on and on and on. And, you know, not that George Bush would have taken the troops out, but had Bush taken the troops out, then what a great decision it would be. You know, and I'm just tired of the hypocrisy. I'm totally fed up with the garbage that goes on in our politics today. And let me tell you something. People are getting it in terms of, you see the Wall Street marches. And
right.
I wrote you and told you we got one out here in the Springs. You know, this is a Republican town and we've got Wall Street marches. And Mike, I wrote you last night and told you they were applying for a 1-year permit.
Mm-hmm.
It got approved. I couldn't believe it. But hey, that's because people are pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And if President Obama hasn't gotten it, like Derek said, we need to be marching down Pennsylvania Avenue.
I hear you.
So thanks for letting me vent. I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin, thanks. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I don't know what to think. That's why I'm turning it over to you. Ron is lost in PA. Hello, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Ron.
Yeah. Well, here's my thoughts on this. Basically, it always comes down to numbers for me. Well, always, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that's kind of like always missing in like news reports about this. They talk about the casualties in terms of U.S., right?
The
4,500 soldiers that have been killed, the 32,500 soldiers who come back with no limbs, wounded. I've always been concerned about the civilian casualties in Iraq. I mean, since the whole thing began under its, you know, felonious pretext, you know, the yellow cake BS or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
I always think it's in the cost of, you know, like, people like me, people who live in Iraq who just happen to be Iraqi and being there. Because, you know, I suppose if I was an Iraqi, I'd probably be a target too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got like several surveys, like the Family Health Survey says there's 151,000 violent deaths. The Lancet Survey, 600 to 654,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
The Opinion Research Business Survey said there's 1,033,000. So the numbers are all over the place. Like
right.
AP said there was 100. These are people's lives. These
That's
are
right.
children.
Yeah.
These are children's lives, like Molly and my son Henry. These people disappeared for what? And so it seems, mm-hmm. it seems sort of like lackluster. Though, okay, 3 years into his presidency, he finally keeps his campaign promise to end the war in Iraq, that which should have never been started in the first place.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, you know, the thing that they're not telling you, though, about it, and I heard this tonight on RT, was that one of the main reasons why Obama is pulling out is because the Iraqi government voted them out. They don't want U.S. troops there, even though there's going to be like 16,000, you know, contractors left behind, because they got all those bases over there, right? They got
Well, you know, Ron, the voting out, let me put you on hold and I'll come back because I got to do a break. The voting out... Not quite that. The Iraqis said any American troops left after the end of the year would be subject to Iraqi law. And Obama said no, he couldn't leave U.S. troops exposed that way. So, all right, stick around. We're going to take a break and we'll come back. Ron, I'll come back to you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Now, how many people must get killed?
Oil families' pockets to get filled.
How many oil families get killed?
Not a damn one, so what's the deal?
Flying monkeys on the air. Flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 25 before the hour. We're talking about Obama's decision today, or his announcement today, that all the troops are going to be home by the end of the year. Back to Ron in Lawson, PA, in Phoenixville, PA. All right, where were you?
Well, I mean, it's like I said, it was like a war of numbers, you know, for me. And it's, well, I never really called it a war anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like they ever attacked us. So it's sort of, it was, there's a lot of, you know, foemen out there, you know, it was like Bush's retribution against, you know, Saddam Hussein because of his pop or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we spent $900 billion on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got like a stat here. It says like the cost of deploying one soldier to Iraq was $390,000. I know a lot of schools in the U.S. that they could use $390,000.
Right, not to mention the death and dismemberment and disfigurement and the fact that we now have another generation of American soldiers that are going to need care, which they probably will not get.
Well, I'm a vet. I know about the VA. Let me tell you something.
Okay,
you
there
know?
You go.
You know, I know what they're like. They're slow at best.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's the other stat, right? 28% of Iraqi children suffer from chronic malnutrition. We caused those people to suffer. We have shamed ourselves as a nation. When we can go in and just, like, you know, categorically murder people and go home and eat dinner. We're no better than the guys at Auschwitz who would go in and throw Jews in the oven and go home and bounce their daughter on their knees at night. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of sociopathy. I can't listen to the news because I always think in terms of human beings.
Right.
How can you not?
Right.
How can you not? They're just like you and me. They're people. And they're caught in, you know, and I hate euphemisms to casualties. Like George Carlin used to say, what are they, just lounging around?
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on, it's ridiculous. So that's my take on it. It makes me, I'm an incredibly sad human being when I think of that. And I've been carrying that around in my heart for the whole 9 years because I was against it from the get-go.
Right.
I'm a Kucinich supporter like a lot of your listeners. I actually worked on his campaign once. So I would have loved to have seen him become the president, you know. Somebody who would institute a Department of Peace. Wouldn't that be a hoot? But, yeah, so that's my take on it. I mean, you know, I'm with you. I listened to you every night, I'm like most of your listeners are like going, God, is there anybody out there?
And it's
like that because you look at the real human cost of the war, and it doesn't matter what Mr. Obama says.
Mm.
It doesn't matter at this point. You know, if he had any ethics in my mind, and he would have done like what you suggested before, politically. He would have said, I don't care if I get reelected. This is wrong. We should not be doing this.
Right. Well, fat chance of that happening. All right, Ron, thanks, man. I appreciate you your calling in tonight. Stay in touch.
Mike.
All right, stay in touch.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, take care. Lonnie is in Tobyhanna, PA. Hello, Lonnie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right.
My take on it is I think Obama had this planned all along from the beginning. And I think he planned, you know, letting them having all the troops come home at this juncture because of his reelection. And I think he would have done it whether he had good poll numbers or bad poll numbers.
Well, now wait. We're a year, a little more than a year away from the election. If it was just a political ploy, why not wait until 8 or 10 months from now, because you know the American public has a retention level of about, you know, a week. By doing it now, if it's just for re-election, by doing it now, who's going to remember? I mean, I will remember, but it won't have the impact.
I think that he plans to do a lot of things, you know, from now until he's re-elected. And you know, when he's having debates and, you know, reflecting on what he has done, that's going to be one of the things that he has done. The only thing that upsets me is, like, I voted for Obama, and he disappointed me just like he disappointed a lot of people because, you know, we all thought he was going to be better than he was. But I think that is our fault because we propped him up to, you know, be this, you know, Jesus-like person when he's only a man and he really can't be Jesus. So we got disappointed when he wasn't able to become Jesus. And I think the fact that we complain that, oh, he hasn't done this fast enough, he hasn't done that fast enough, he has done a lot of things that he promised to do, and this is one of the things that he did promise to do. But still, progressives will complain, and they'll complain enough where, you know, they talk on your show and other people listen to him and they'll say, yeah, he hasn't done this. And then all of a sudden, Romney's president. And then they got something to really complain about. That's what upsets me. Because I get the fact that, you know, people are upset with Obama. But, you know, you have to balance that a little bit.
Well, you know, if anybody is upset with Obama, it's me.
I listen to you a lot.
Yeah, well, do you think I'm wrong? I mean, just tell me, do you?
I think you're right, and I think you're wrong. I think you're right. I think you're right in.
You sound like Herman Cain now.
No. I think you're right in the way that you criticize. You know, like he should have done this. He should have done that. Yeah, you're right, but I think you vilify him a little bit more than he deserves.
And in what particular area? He has refused to take control where it concerns the economy. He folds as soon as the Republicans jump up in the House or the Senate and go boo. He has authorized the assassination of anybody on earth now at this point, including American citizens. He is denying people equal protection under the law. I mean, where am I criticizing him too much?
Well, I can't disagree with you. That's where, you know, I'm with you on that. I can't disagree with you, too much on that, but I think on some of those issues, he may be doing it because, you know, he has no choice. And And I mean, in my mind, would McCain have done a better job?
Well, I mean, if we look at the presidency in relative terms, I think that's, you know, what would this person have done in relation to that person? I don't think that's the way to look at it, Lonnie. I think we, you know, Obama made some specific promises of things he was going to do. I remember his saying that if there was a need, if there was a strike, he would put on a comfortable pair of shoes and join the picket line, which turned out to be hogwash. He said that he was going to get us off of oil, and he has issued permits or permission for BP to bid on more wells dug into the Gulf of Mexico. He also is granting permission to bring the tar sands muck out of Alberta all the way down to Texas. He's giving Shell permits, authorizing Shell to have permits to drill in the Alaskan part of the Arctic Ocean. So, I mean, I can just go on and on here. I can't think. He promised a public option in his healthcare reform, insurance reform, before he was elected. He said, yeah, there will be a public option. And he refused to even discuss it. So the man has lied. That's the point I'm getting to, Lonnie. This is not a question of politics. This is a question of a 47-year-old man who got elected president. He's 47 at the time. He looked at all of us and he said he's going to do X, Y, and Z, and he's not done it. That to me is a liar. I don't care what the circumstances are, what would McCain have done, what would this one have done. This is what Barack Obama said he was going to do. He has not done it. Now, if you make a promise and then you don't, especially at a time like this, when the survival of the damn planet is at risk, you make promises like that and then just drop it, forget about it, and renege on it. Matter of fact, do the opposite. What do you call that, Lonnie?
Well, in my humble opinion, I think that a lot of those things he actually wanted to do, because.
All right, like, all right, Lonnie, listen. Listen, Lonnie, let me interrupt you because I've got to move on here. I hear what you're saying, but, you know, you keep kind of granting Obama the right to be a waffler. You know, you say, well, I know he wanted to do those things. Well, he damn sure, Lonnie, must not have wanted to do them very much, or he would have done them. He's the president of the United States, for Christ's sake. He's the most powerful human being on earth. And as far as these Republican bastards that keep getting in his way, if he lets that continue to happen, as he has the first 3 years of his presidency, he's dead meat. I mean, if he isn't already. Thanks, Lonnie. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, we're talking about Obama's announcement today that the U.S. will comply with the deadline for a complete withdrawal of troops from Iraq that was set by security agreements made in 2008 under the Bush administration. Today's announcement, according to Jeff Rubin of MoveOn.org, today's announcement marks the end of a war that should never have happened. We're grateful that our soldiers will finally be coming home from Iraq, but we must never forget the thousands of American servicemen and women and the many more Iraqi civilians who died. We honor all of their sacrifices and hold in our hearts the thousands of families who will be living with the traumatic wounds of war for years. I don't know how the United States, under I don't care what government, I don't know how this can be spun to have any honor to it at all, like the Marine that was screaming at the New York cops the other night, that you've seen the video. There is no honor in this. There is no honor in this. He was yelling at the cops. Isn't that also true about what George W. Bush and the neocons, these filthy pigs, the New American Project for New American Century, all of this swine, these scum, these killers, these cowards who ordered Bush to invade and occupy another country, therefore thereby committing the worst crime, international crime available, according to what we decided at Nuremberg. And nobody is, nobody's doing anything about it. Kelly is in Nauvoo, Illinois. Hello, Kelly.
Oh, hi, Mike. All I wanted to comment on was Nixon used, he waited till 1972 right before the election to bring the troops home, and that's what a Republican would do. They'd stuff a sock in their pants, make a big announcement, and this is pretty low-key.
Well, Nixon didn't bring the troops home. What are you referring to?
Well, didn't he announce right before the...
No, what he announced right before the 72 election was that he had a plan that he was going to bring them home. It took another three years, and then the United States troops, we had to bug out. You don't remember those scenes of the helicopters?
You're right.
Hovering over the U.S. embassy in Saigon.
Yeah, you're right. I just right before the election, though, didn't he make some kind of announcement that it was over. Vietnamization and all that.
Well, now, wait a minute. There were two elections. There were 68 and 72. Back in 68, he said that he had a plan. In 72, I think he said the same thing both times. I don't know. But let me put it this way. Don't forget that in 1972, Nixon won every state except Massachusetts, I think, which was McGovern's home state. And he got the youth vote. This is back at the time we had a draft. He won in just about every demographic. It was a landslide, not unlike when Lyndon Johnson defeated Barry Goldwater. It was about the same thing. I don't know how the electoral votes came out, but it was about the same thing. So, I don't know what to make of any of it. It would seem to me the American public would have had enough at this point of wars and invasions and occupations and dead soldiers and dead civilians and people coming back with arms and legs blown off. I don't know, Kelly. Nixon was as caught up in this as Obama, except I really do think that Nixon was, I don't know what I think anymore. It's too confusing. I think they're all corrupt. I really do. And that sounds like my grandfather or somebody, but I really do. I don't think there is a Democrat or a Republican out there, with one or two exceptions. I'm not discounting someone like Kucinich. And, I don't know. But there must be a Democrat or an independent or a progressive or somebody without a party affiliation who could lead the country. I sure don't see it in the people that are vying to run the country. I don't see them succeeding at all. Do you?
No, I don't either.
At least not this crop. All right, Kelly, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. I don't mean to make it sound so pessimistic. I really don't. But if you look at the, what is it, 7, 8, 9 wannabe nominees for the Republican Party, these candidates who are putting themselves out there, I have never seen, and neither of you, be honest, a more disgusting, useless, talentless, incompetent collection of freaks in my life who are saying that they can lead this country. No, they cannot. Any one of those Republicans elected, with the possible exception of Huntsman, and I don't know, any one of those Republicans were they to become president, it would be like the Queen of England being the leader of England. She's a figurehead. This Republican would be nothing more, nothing less than a figurehead, and would do exactly what he, or in the case of Bachman, she, what they're told to do. No leadership at all. None. Not in the Republican Party. In the Democratic Party, there are a few people, I guess, but they have no interest in running. And I wish that weren't the case, because there is some talent still in the Democratic Party. But, oh, well. All right, we have a break here. We're going to do podcast trivia at the bottom of this hour coming, so stick around. If you want to continue to talk about this, okay, we'll take your calls on this particular topic. So if you're on hold, stay there, but then we're going to move on. I'm just glad that we have, how many people we still have in there? 30, 40,000 people in uniform. I'm just glad that they're going to leave. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Program. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join in. Chad is in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hello, Chad.
Hey, Mike. Great show.
Thanks.
I think we, the American people and voters, have basically gotten caught up in playing the game too much, the blue team versus the red team, you know, and I'm certainly guilty of that. And not paying attention to what these folks are actually doing. You know, you expressed some dissatisfaction in the Obama administration, what the president has done in regards to economic policy and those sorts of things. And, you know, this withdrawal of troops really marks the first action in terms of foreign policy or in regard to war that even really looks like a Democrat presidency. Other than that, you know, it's been a continuation and, dare I say, an expansion on the same policies that the Bush administration carried out as far as getting involved in more wars and escalating and those sorts of things. And, you know, it's not a far cry apart in economic policy either. I mean, really, George Bush had already come around to our way of thinking on, you know, economic policy with making sure we get this stimulus money out. And so, you know, I think getting caught up in whether the blue team or red team wins or, you know, self-identifying with a party, I think we may be missing the issues. And and it's caused us to not pay attention, Mike, to what's actually going on.
Well, I tend to agree with that. I don't think there is a whole lot of difference. I know a lot of people argue with me about this, but I don't think there's a whole lot of difference in substance. There's difference in form between Bush and Obama.
Yeah, but social policy.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm sorry. I mean, I have people who contribute to this program who tell me I'm crazier than a loon by saying that. but I just don't see it. I wish I did. I wish I could see a clear, bright line between Bush policies and Obama policies. But I guess it all comes back to what we've been talking about. And Chad, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate it. What we've been talking about here on this program for so long is that the party apparatus of the two political parties in this country, the only two that managed to field candidates, the party apparatus has been totally subsumed by corporate America. And to expect a Democrat like Barack Obama to be able to lead from a progressive point of view or a liberal point of view with those kinds of policies, I think is probably impossible. And again, I know I will get argument about that from people. I'm thinking specifically of Prairie 2, and a couple other people, but, I just don't see, the difference. I don't see it. I swear to God, I don't. Obama doesn't have a murderous son of a bitch like Dick Cheney as his vice president. He's got, Joe Biden. I don't think, although there are a lot of things about Biden. Don't forget Biden. Wasn't Biden one of the people who just climbed all over Anita Hill when she had the temerity to tell the truth about that son of a bitch that now sits on the Supreme Court? I've said it before and I'm kind of stuck with it. I don't see how or where there is a substantive difference between the two parties. Now, before you send me all kinds of emails telling me I'm crazier in hell, I grant you that the Republican Party puts up morons and jackasses to run for office. I'm not saying that Michelle Bachmann or Herman Cain or Rick Santorum are on the same level as Barack Obama. Not at all. I realize that those three names I just named, those people are clinically insane. Rick Perry is just a total dumbass. I shudder to think of a Rick Perry presidency. So what does that mean then? We're all supposed to make sure that Barack Obama gets reelected? Or is it possible that there is another candidate out there? You know, we're still a year and a month away from the next election. Is there a possibility that there is a Democrat out there who can challenge, or an independent who can challenge Obama from the left? This is the idea that Nader has put out. He and a bunch of other people signed off on a letter that went to, they're keeping the name secret, but went to a number of progressive Americans, not necessarily politicians, asking them if they would mount a challenge from the left to Barack Obama in the primary season. So far, I don't know if there have been any takers. I haven't heard that there are or aren't. But I cannot accept the policies of Barack Obama as being liberal or progressive, or in the least having the best interest of the American people as the goal. I'm sorry. I don't know who I'm apologizing to, but I'm sorry to sound like some kind of a hard ass about that. But if you see a difference, please let me know. Right? Mary is in early Iowa. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm having a few tests, but I'll be all right.
Okay.
I just want to say I don't trust him any further than I can throw him.
Mm.
He still has Geithner. He'll never get rid of him.
Right.
And what bothers me that Petraeus and Panetta have changed places.
Mm-hmm.
And I just believe he's in reelection mode. And he had 2 years to get these things done, but he never, he deliberately let them dumb down health care.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the way he wanted it. We have no green energy policy because of big oil. This is a man who uses extraordinary rendition, which is horrid. He evidently doesn't think of the innocent men, women, and children he's killing and destroying their homes. And he uses drones. He uses torture. A man who will do that, there's something wrong with him. He's let them do it. He's not defended Bradley Manning one bit. I don't trust him, and he's a corporatist. He will change. He's in Africa. Now I wonder why he's there. They have great resources. And I do hope the occupiers keep this in mind. I listened today to, MSNBC, and they're thinking it's a great thing that he's done this because he promised he would do it. Well, I just think he knows he better do it. He's also leaving paramilitary in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that we could get the contracts, make good on the contracts. I don't trust him one bit. I can't help it, and I'm worried about our country, as usual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear you, Mary, loud and clear. Listen, I have to take a break. Thanks a lot, Mary. I appreciate you checking in. We're certainly on the same page, you and I, that's for sure. We'll be right back.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Sang a song as he rode along, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar, laid his
21 past the hour. After the next break, we will have podcast trivia where if you get the correct answer, you win a 1 year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. Jeff is in Annapolis, Maryland. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you? This is listener number 14 from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay, good. Well, I wondered where you were.
Yeah, well, I haven't called for a while. I was telling Kathy, I've been listening to you since I think the second day you were on the air at Air America. You were talking about Molly. You had just brought her home from the hospital a few days earlier. So I've been around. I've called a few times. Generally just listen on podcasts, so unfortunately I don't get a chance to call
Hey,
in.
Jeff, hold on just a second because I forgot to do something here.
Sure.
The sponsorship for this hour. From Melinda and Walter in Long Beach, California. They're our sponsors this hour. Thank you very much, Melinda and Walter. And their message, keep the light burning, Mike. We need you. Oh, that's sweet. Melinda and Walter in Long Beach, California are sponsoring this hour. Thanks a lot, folks. I appreciate it. Okay, thanks, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so what I was calling about is I kind of hit the wall here with the so-called liberal progressive talk radio that's out there that still insists that, well, you know, you got to vote for Obama, you got to vote for Obama. And, you know, I tend to ask myself the question, if we just changed out the president right now, and that's all, left the House of Representatives the same way it was with the Senate marginally controlled by the Democrats, would it really be that different? Other than the fact he can speak in a complete sentence, and would it really be that different with one of these yahoos as president? Not that I want to see one of them, but I just don't see Obama, whether he's been bought out, sold out, or this is what he was from the beginning. I don't see him as I don't see him as anything but a you know, placeholder in history. He I think you said it before. He's gotten his historic moment. He was the first non-white president of the United States. It's a shame. I voted for him. I had a lot of hope for him, but I can't. I don't know that I can bite my lip again and vote for another lesser of two evils. You know, I did it with Kerry, and I just can't do it again. I think you hit it right on the head. This Occupy movement is what it's going to take, and I'm also interested. You had some of my colleagues on. I'm a member of the NNU, the National Nurses.
Oh, Network. Really? Yeah. That's a great organization.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And I'm going to be. We have an action on. I think it's November the 3rd, and I'm not exactly sure of all the details.
Yeah, I was talking about that last night. I'm not sure of the date now either. It's within the first week in November. I don't have it right in front of me. I can find it, but it's going to be coordinated with a meeting of the G20 in Cannes, France. It's going to happen here, and the equivalent of the National Nurses United, the equivalent union in Europe, is also going to be demanding the transaction tax on all this all this crap that is handled on these various money changers, and for the NNU to come out strongly in favor. A lot of people say, "Well, they're nurses. What the hell are they talking about?" Yeah, well, they're nurses, and that's the reason that they're talking about it, is because it's that kind of action by an organization that is interested in taking care of folks that's so necessary. How else are things going to be paid for in this country without making these the ultra wealthy, or the people who slide under the regulations, these the people that cause the recessions, to make them pay?
I agree. I see it in my everyday practice. I'm actually a nurse practitioner. But it's amazing. I don't know if amazing is the right word. It's horrifying, really. And I actually work in the inner city. I don't work in Annapolis. And the stuff that I see, and how much of it could be prevented with if these people. I'm a neonatal nurse practitioner, so I take care of sick and premature babies, and how many of these premature babies I see come in that if these moms would have had prenatal care,
right,
I probably would have never seen them. It's the whole thing, you know, from the top down, the everything's a mess. But you know, I that's my little microcosm that I see, and I will be there on the 3rd. I wanted to get down to the opening of the Occupy Wall Street, but. You know, unfortunately, I'm like everybody else. I'm working two jobs.
And, I hear you.
And trying to raise some kids on my own, so it's tough. But I'll be there. And I called initially just to say thank you, because you are one of the few voices out there that you know, calling it like it is, and you know, if you're not singing, well, we got the Supreme Court to save, or we got this to save, or, well, you know, let's give him one more chance. He deserves another chance.
I'm so tired
and
of
he
that.
Doesn't.
Yeah, I'm so tired of that, Jeff, and I know you are, and I know a lot of people are, too. Hey, listen, pal, I got to move on. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you very much. I hope you call again. Take care. We'll be right back. When we come back, podcast trivia. Stay with us.
Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with why.
once again for podcast trivia. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. By the way, this hour is being sponsored by Melinda and Walter in Long Beach, California. Their message, keep the light burning. Mike, we need you. Thanks, folks. I appreciate the sponsorship. Now, we're going to do trivia. Who do we have here? Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, this is Kevin again.
How many times have you tried, Kevin?
Have I tried calling in for podcast trivia?
Yeah.
This is the second time. The last time I was on hold and someone beat me to the game.
Ah, well, let's see if you can win this time, okay?
Okay.
Here's your question. Which of the following statements has Herman Cain made on his way to the Republican nomination for president? Are you ready?
Yep.
Abortion should be a private family decision. That's A. B. Abortion should be illegal. C. His tax plan would lower everyone's taxes. D. There might be some people whose taxes would increase. E. America has got to learn to take a joke. Or F. All of the above.
Well, you had to give me a hard one, didn't you?
Yeah.
I would probably... Oh, gosh. Give me C through... C through F again.
C through F. His tax plan would lower everyone's taxes. There might be... D. There might be some people whose taxes would increase. E. America's got to learn to take a joke. Or F. All of the above.
Gosh, I would have to say, I want to say F, but because I know some of the other ones aren't right. So, but what were the two abortion ones again? Abortion should be a private family matter.
Wait a second. I don't know, Kevin. We're going to give it to him. All right, Kevin, Kathy says we're just going to give it to you, okay?
Very good.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Kevin, and Kathy will get the information. Good God, it was F!
I just couldn't listen to it again.
Yeah, Kathy couldn't listen to me say it again. F, okay, it's F. F, F, Kevin! Woo! Did I mention this hour is sponsored? I think I did, by Melinda and Walter! Thank you, Walter and Melinda, in Long Beach, California. Keep the light burning, Mike. We need you. Just give him the damn thing, Kathy. Oh, my God. All right. Kathy is calling from where, Kathy? Kathy? Wait a minute. Let me see if we can get Kathy. Can we get Kathy? No Kathy. Okay, not this Kathy. Let me try one more time. Kathy, are you there? Can you potter up? Kathy, Bay? Okay. Okay, we'll try Kathy later. I gotta get this one in. At some point tonight, this would probably be a good time. There is a University of Pennsylvania Eric Cantor dispute. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor today canceled a speech that he was going to give at the Wharton School of Business, University of Pennsylvania. He was going to give a speech on income inequality. And he's blaming the university, saying that the University of Pennsylvania changed the attendance policy at the last minute. Okay, you like that? Eric Cantor says, I'm not going to give the speech because at the last minute, University of Pennsylvania changed the attendance policy. And a Cantor spokeswoman, Laina Fallon, said the office of the majority leader was informed last night by Capitol Police that the University of Pennsylvania was unable to ensure that the attendance policy previously agreed to could be met. In a statement just released by the university, the school says the cantor is crazier than a loon, saying the speech was always billed as, quote, open to the general public, end quote. This is their statement. Wharton deeply regrets that the event scheduled at the school this afternoon with Majority Leader Eric Cantor has been canceled. The university community was looking forward to hearing Majority Leader Cantor's comments on important public issues, and we hope there will be another opportunity for him to speak on campus. The Wharton Speaker Series is typically open to the general public, and that is how the event with Majority Leader Cantor was billed. We very much regret if there was any misunderstanding with the Majority Leader's office on the staging of his presentation. Now, do you want the truth? Here's the truth. Cantor's decision to cut and run occurred after he found out that there was a large march and protest planned prior to his speech, with the participation by Occupy Philadelphia and other groups. Now, you know, of course, that Cantor has dismissed the Occupy movement as a mob. So, at the last minute, you know, I've said before on this program that all Republican office holders are cowards, and in addition to being liars, they are all, every single last one of them is a coward. Confronted with the idea that there would be demonstrators outside where he was going to speak, caused this little bastard to cut and run. Eric Cantor, the speaker, or he's speaker of the House, right? No, he's the majority leader. Come on, Mike, there's too many of them. The House majority leader decided when he found out there was going to be a demonstration, rather than confront it like a man, to stand up and say, hey, all right, let me hear what you got to say. Here's what I have to say. He cuts and runs. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Do you want to, if you want to call in, we have three open lines now. Are the phones working? You don't know? Okay, they were working. 877-996-2556. And I would like to have heard, at least read, something that Eric Cantor said about income equality, especially after reading this today in The Atlantic by Derek Thompson. 50% of all workers in 2010 made less than $26,000 for the year. I mean, think about that for a second, huh? What is that? That would be $500 a week. Now, I know a lot of people would probably say, hell, I'll take that. But 50% of all workers made less than $26,000. So that was the median wage in 2010. That means that the typical wage is at its lowest level in 12 years after adjusting for inflation. At the same time, the number of millionaires increased by about 20%. And the third interesting stat here is the number of the missing workforce is 10 million. The number of working people fell by 5.2 million since 2007. But that's not the entire job deficit, because based on population growth estimates, 4.5 million more would have joined the workforce between 2007 and 2011. Add it up and you get a 10 million person worker gap. The median wage in 2010 was $26,000. You know, we used to have a middle class in this country. Do any of you remember that? Yeah, I remember it. Magilla Gorilla is in his truck somewhere. Hey, Magilla.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's been a long time. I haven't talked to you since 2003, the fall of 2003.
Oh, my God, it's been that long?
Yeah, I think you were with IE America at the time.
Yeah, probably so. My God, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I even remember where I was. It was near Beaver Dam, Ohio.
Huh.
And
you have a memory like a steel trap, Magilla.
Oh no, not really. No. I wish it was that good. Probably would be doing something other than what I'm doing. Although that's okay too. I got a job.
Yeah. Well, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a question for you, and the question is: now that we have Occupy, Wall Street, and Occupy hundreds and hundreds of other places in the country, and I'm very proud of those people. I'm proud of the young people who are now standing up and making their constitutional right, or taking on their constitutional rights of free expression and the rights to organize and the right to assemble.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it might be a good idea to start advocating the Occupy the U.S. Congress.
That's a good one. Hey, hold on a second, Magilla, because I've got to take a break here. Just stay right there. We'll come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Walter in Long Beach, California. Their message, keep the light burning, Mike. We need you. Well, I need you folks too, Melinda and Walter. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the sponsorship very much. Melinda and Walter in Long Beach, California. Thanks, folks. We were talking with Magilla. All right, Magilla.
Yeah, Mike, I was thinking that given that the Congress, particularly the Senate, I guess, last night, decided that they couldn't bring themselves to charge 0.5% on people who make more than $1 million a year, they need a little bit of encouragement to give them a spine to stand up to the most affluent people in the world, people who, and not all of them are greedy or selfish, by any means. But there are certainly plenty of them who are greedy and selfish. And then there's a bunch of them in the Senate, who are way too affluent, in their own right. And so, in many ways, this is like, a conflict of interest for a lot of these people. They could never bring themselves to, to say, I'm going to give 0.5%
right.
of my money, So, I just thought that, we needed a little bit of the up the ante. And I was wondering what you might think of that.
Well, of course. But how are you going to get people who feel entitled to continue to gut what's left of our system? How are you going to get them to say, okay, just kidding. Here, let me contribute, at least on some level, to the survival of this country? When people become this greedy, as the folks that we're talking about here, there's nothing, they feel no obligation to the United States whatsoever. They consider themselves global citizens, I guess. or citizens who don't live anywhere, they can live wherever they want to. They don't have a permanent resident. Most of these, the ultra-rich, they have homes all over the damn place. So, and the international corporations, they are not beholden to any country's laws, any nation's laws, certainly not the tax laws. So why should they contribute to an empire that is dying? That would be us. That's the way they look at it. They don't give a rat's ass about the United States. They couldn't care less. So there's no way to motivate these people. I think if we had a Congress that was not populated with cowardly Democrats and cowardly lying Republicans, I think that the Congress, without prodding from the president, would say, look, it's time to make these folks step up to the plate and pay their fair share. But one thing you have to remember is the number of millionaires in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate is at an all-time high. I don't know what the number is, but the last I heard, the Senate, I think 40 or 50 or maybe 60 of the members of the U.S. Senate have a net worth of well over $1 million. So, you know, what are you going to do? I don't know. That's why I'm
advocating that. You know, I mean, I think it's the only, you know, it's the next step. I mean, I'm very proud, as I said, of the people who are doing Occupy.
Right. Absolutely.
But I'm also of the generation that you're from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of us in the 70s, you know, we got in our VW vans and our VW bugs and our beat up cars, and some of us walked, you know, in our sandals, and we walked, and we headed for the farms, we headed for the mountains, we headed for the forests. Some of us started the organic farm movement, you know, after a lot of bad tomatoes, you know, bad crops of tomatoes. And you know, we've gotten involved in the environmental movement. Some of us sold out, and we got two-car garages, and we're executives. But, you know, now our kids have started the movement, and they've started and their kids, right? Our kids and their kids,
right,
have started the occupation movement. And, you know, in many ways, what I'd like to see is people from the movement in the 60s and 70s get it together and put our, you know, lives on the line, because it wouldn't be like the Occupy. This one would be definitely pushing the envelope. Mm-hmm. This one would be putting yourself on the line in a way that Occupy has not yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, okay? What they're doing is extremely important,
right.
All right? But I'm also saying that for this to really work, we're going to have to be more pushy.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And there's going to have to be, instead of hundreds or sometimes thousands of people participating in the Occupy movement, it's going to take millions. And until that day, and I'm just about out of time, this segment, Magilla, listen, don't let 8 years go by again. Jesus. But until you call again, until we have millions of people in the United States who will take to the streets in peaceful demonstrations, but as a warning to both the Democrats and the Republicans, as a warning to the Supreme Court, as a warning to the Congress and the executive branch, if you people don't get your acts together and start governing the country, if you are the legislative branch, leading the country, if you are the executive branch, and interpreting the laws the way they should be interpreted, not based on some right-wing ideology if you're the Supreme Court. If you don't do it, take this as a warning. We are peaceful now. We will remain peaceful as long as we can. But I have one word for you. Libya. Thanks, Magilla. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. You know what we're talking about here. I want to share with you some of the emails that have come in tonight. I've been busy horsing around with this live stream nonsense and have not opened or checked a whole lot of email here coming into us. This is from Bruce in California. Mike, I was thrilled to hear the news that the troops are coming home from Iraq, nearly 9 years since they were sent. I was against this fiasco from the start, and to finally see the end in sight is cause for celebration. However, I'm a little put off with Obama's reference to as promised. This was not the keeping of a campaign promise by an anti-war successor to a warmonger. Obama actually wanted to keep them there, but he couldn't get Iraqi acquiescence to immunity from their local laws, and basically, the agreement that was negotiated by Bush ran its course. Obama had no choice but to bring the troops home. I was frustrated to see the way he tried to spin it, but there's a deeper reality here. Spin or not, they are coming home. No matter what we say here, history will always record him as being in office at the end of American involvement in Iraq. And I think I'd be a real jerk if I didn't give him some props for it, even if he did try to present it in an obviously false light. Good on you, Barry. Now all you got to do is get us the hell out of Afghanistan and keep us out of Iran. Bruce in California. From Mark in Missouri, Mike, had a chat with a State Department employee today about Iraq. As an Arabic speaker originally from Iraq and having his last State Department stint in Iraq within the past few years, I asked him about this pullout. He said he and his security was U.S. Army and on bases and not by contractors. What about the bases and embassies supporting contractors? He agreed that there was no mention about the contractors that will remain. He indicated we are not leaving regarding a number of bases and, of course, the green zone. Obama, in his speech, did not specify whether combat or support are leaving. What do we think is going to guard the green zone? I'd gotten the same indication from an engineering National Guard captain after he came back from his deployment a few years after we invaded Iraq, that they were building 20-year structures, not the typical temporary ones used on bases in short-term conflicts. Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to more conflicts we go. Mark in Missouri. And from Dave in Los Angeles, good evening, Mike. Regarding the Iraq withdrawal, quote, quote, we have built a massive mini-city called the Green Zone, which houses the American Embassy. This is not going anywhere. The State Department is now in charge of the Iraq situation, and they are going to have approximately 16,000 contractors, or in plain English, mercenaries, supporting the embassy. Imagine the outrageous costs that will continue to be put on the backs of the American taxpayer. The State Department is now in the business of managing a mercenary army and an undercover war. Muqtada al-Sadr has threatened war on American troops if we do not withdraw by the established deadline. 150 American troops will be left behind. I assume these will be special operations units. So basically, it is all smoke and mirrors, as usual. Dave in Los Angeles. And from PC, what the hell is wrong with everyone? Hillary Clinton is laughing over the murder of Gaddafi. Didn't you see the blood and greed hanging from the fangs of these people? They are following the PNAC blueprint of another Pearl Harbor and strategic military operations around the world. They will never completely get out of any place they go in. They will just move to their next victim. When you all wake up, you will realize we are also on the list. From Jocelyn in California, Mike, that Chad guy who said there wasn't a difference between the parties was such a right-wing plant. As soon as he said that Bush came around to our side because he was for the stimulus, I didn't believe anything he said. I'm super tired of everyone complaining about the Democratic Party. Like it or not, a third party won't work right now, and it would take a lot less energy to take over the Democratic Party and change it than to create a third party. And the laws needed to make it viable. Let's all do it together. Become a Democratic Party official or run for office yourself. Be the change, people. Jocelyn in California. You know, Jocelyn, that's what I used to say. It really is. Until I spent enough time, thanks to this job that I have, this occupation, this profession, whatever the hell this is, I spent enough time around a couple of entities, Democratic National Committee. Who was the guy we had lunch with that time? Oh, where'd Kathy go? Oh, she's over there. Who is that guy we had, the head of the DNC that we had lunch with that time in a meeting?
Terry McAuliffe,
yeah. Having spent enough time, more than enough time, around the Democratic Party, and realizing that the real heavy-duty Democratic Party operatives are not going to allow the Democratic Party to go back to what it was at one time in recent history, the voice of the working people, the party, the coalition building party, the party that they still talk this talk, but they don't walk the walk anymore. And to effect a liberal or progressive takeover of the Democratic Party, I'm sorry to say this, is an impossibility. It is simply a mathematical or a factual impossibility. The Democratic Party is now a wholly owned subsidiary of the same capitalist interests that also own the Republican Party. The only difference is the Republican Party, being the party out of executive power, has the ability to prance across the stage seeking the nomination of the biggest collection of clowns and half-wits ever put together to run for the presidency of the United States. The Democratic Party still has a few rational people within its upper reaches, but because they're rational, I don't think they'll ever run for the presidency. Unless, you know, some circumstance impels them to do it, like a power tripping or what have you. You know, I hate to say it. I really do. But to have a progressive takeover of the Democratic Party, which is what I would choose, is, in my opinion, impossible. We are so far beyond that possibly happening, Jocelyn. I in the first place, let me give you a personal example, just on a local level. About 15 years ago, 16 years ago, I decided to run for office here in Georgia, the Georgia General Assembly, the Georgia House of Representatives, as a Democrat in the 67th House District here, which includes Emory University. It's the most liberal district via its voting patterns, the most liberal district in the state of Georgia. And given my profile from broadcasting and given my point of view and having written op-ed pieces and yada, 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 the people that decided to go to work with me on this campaign said, look, you should be a shoo-in. What you're going to need to win this is about 6,000 votes. That's all you're going to need, and you'll be in the Georgia General Assembly. So I went down, filled in the papers, put together the committee, and got all the documents in order, and started to build a campaign. Well, the established Democratic Party in the county where I lived at the time, DeKalb County, where I was running for office or wanted to run for office, the established Democratic Party, once they heard what I was doing, that I decided on my own to run for the Georgia House of Representatives, they went berserk and more or less told me, how dare you? We have a Democrat incumbent in that seat. And I said, yeah, but his voting record is a dino, Democrat in name only. He's not representing the liberal district that he represents. He's not doing it. So the Democratic Party established, I'm talking 16 years ago. You know what they told me? A, no support for you. B, sit down and shut up. And C, how dare you?
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So the only reason I told that little ridiculous story, Jocelyn, about what happens if you try to insert a real progressive or a real liberal into the Democratic Party is not to be a smartass and you know, come back at you with some kind of off-the-wall statement, but just, you know, my own personal experience. The Democratic Party, like any political party, the entrenched Democratic Party, they're not going to make way for a liberal or a progressive. And that's what has to happen. You have to be embraced by the party if you're going to run. You know, within the Democratic Party, if you decide, you said in your email here, it would take a lot less energy to take over the Democratic Party and change it than to create a third party. I'm telling you from my own firsthand experience, that simply is, you know, I just totally disagree with that. As do most people who have, that I've come in contact with here in Georgia, who have worked within the system to try to change the system from within. It simply can no longer be done. I don't mean to, you know, throw ice water on everything. So the answer then, if it cannot be done, if the established, entrenched Democratic party power structure says no to someone trying to break into the Democratic Party to run as a real liberal, as a real progressive. And my little experience was on such a micro level. I can't even imagine a real progressive trying to run on a national level. He wouldn't get, or she wouldn't get his or her name on the first ballot. That person wouldn't even be allowed to show up in Iowa for a caucus vote. I'm telling you. The Democratic Party would cut that person's legs off at the knees, figuratively speaking. I don't mean to be the one, Jocelyn, that tosses some reality into this discussion. Political change has got to come through the force of a third party or a fourth or fifth party. We have an entrenched system here. Neither of these parties are ever going to change. 50 years ago, Democrats and Republicans were interested pretty much in seeing that the country advanced. Now, did that mean people were being slaughtered around the planet even then? Of course. Of course it did. Capitalism even then was dictating the direction of the United States. But Democrats and Republicans, you could still kind of break your way in. If you were a real conservative, a John Bircher, you could get a toehold in the Republican Party. If you were a liberal, like a Lyndon Johnson, come on, no emails about that. You could get a toehold. Lyndon Johnson was. It was the Vietnam War that devoured him. But those days are gone. I'm telling you. They're gone. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party are both completely, totally corrupt institutions. Totally. Completely. You want to affect change? The Occupy movement is trying to affect change. The Democrats are already trying to reap the rewards of having several thousand people in the streets every day around the country demanding that the raping and pillaging of the society, this country by the capitalists has to come to an end. But the Democrats are look who Obama has around him. Look where the money comes from to operate the Democratic Party. I mean, come on. We're going to take over that? You want to affect change in this country, the best way to do it, if there is still a way to do it, is get as far away from these two political parties as you possibly can. And that really requires a movement to get that happening. An individual? No, I'm sorry. That's mythology. An individual or two or three individuals are not going to affect political change in this country. It will not happen ever. This is not, you know, 1930. This is not 1960. It's not even 1980. We are so far around the bend in this country with capitalist slash corporate slash corporatist control of every single institution that the only way it's going to be changed is from without, from outside these political parties. They're the two entities that have to be smashed up against the wall at the same time capitalism is flushed down the toilet. Now, what are the chances of that happening? Slim and none. So what are you going to do? Well, put 20 million people in the streets and all of a sudden slim and none changes. And the chances of effecting change become really, really possible.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free.
There are many. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Ty is in Santa Fe listening to KTRC. Hello, Ty.
Yeah, hey, Mike.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay. Mike, I just want to say that, you know, I started listening to you, you know, maybe a year ago, and at first, honestly, I really didn't like to listen to you, but I want to say to you that you are a prophet of change, and you're reading it right. You're spot on. This move that we're seeing, especially among the young, but it's going to get a lot bigger, is actually a shift of consciousness that's going to sweep away this government. And I feel that strongly. We better hope it does, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we better. That's for sure.
But you're reading it right, totally, Mike. And I just want you to know that you've been hitting it and hitting it hard. And you've been getting after the truth, and I appreciate you not being able to be bought. I get a sense that you can't be bought, and we need that so badly right now. You know, in a world that's everything seems to be able to be bought.
Well, those are kind words, and I appreciate them, Ty. The fact is, yeah, we own our little thing here, our own broadcast. Nobody can censor. The only way they can censor us, and this has happened a couple of times, is just a station drops our program or a station moves us to 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's about all they can do. So as long as we have that core of 25 or 30 stations, which isn't a lot, but, it's enough for us, and Sirius and XM and the internet, and of course I think satellite and internet broadcasting is the future anyway. I don't see over the air broadcasting, AM broadcasting, being able to survive. There are too many other sources now that are competing for the same pair of ears in the country, and this of course is because of the internet. Sirius XM is starting internet radio as opposed to the satellite radio that they have now. Well, in addition to the satellite radio, I just heard the first commercial today. I don't know, hell, maybe they've been doing it for 6 months and I'm just not aware of it. But again, the only way that we can be hurt, and it has happened, is to have stations drop us or move us to 3 o'clock in the morning in order to silence what we're saying. But the stations that do carry us, I have to tell you, they've taken some risks to keep us on the air. in their markets because they get a lot of complaints. They get complaints because of my stance on Israel-Palestine, because of the things I've said, and I mean them, about the Catholic Church, because of what I've said about Republicans and Democrats. I don't think there's any area that a lot of our affiliated stations just, I mean, they struggle sometimes, and I really respect them for keeping this program on the air. But you're absolutely right. Nobody can tell us what to say.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, God bless you for doing that, because somebody has to cut to the truth, okay? I want to ask you a question. I got a chill today when I heard about the troops coming home. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. I believe the powers that be are going to have to start a war. This move, they know. They know that it can't be co-opted. It's not going to be put underneath, you know, either party. And I believe that they understand the power and the rage of the people is coming. And the only way they're going to be able to hold power is one of the things I fear is that they're going to start a war with Iran, and that they need the troops home. They need to get them ready to go to another country and impose our will on another country militarily. And I fear for that.
I hope that's not the case, but I have to tell you, I don't think this president, maybe the next one, but I don't think this president is ever going to commit large numbers of troops anyplace. I really do. What Obama has discovered is that the way you get the people that you want is what we should have done back in 2001 after the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. If we're going to accept the official story that 19 hijackers came here with box cutters and defeated the most sophisticated and expensive military security state in the history of the human race. If we're going to believe that, then we've got to understand that the way that we should have gone, and a lot of people advocated this at the time, was to treat it as a criminal act and go after them, not with an invasion of Afghanistan, not with an invasion of Iraq, but with an effort of police agencies, international policing agencies, and I'm not talking about cops on the beat. I'm talking about the specialized investigators and the people who can track down, no matter where they go, track the folks down who perpetrated these crimes and bring them to justice. But we weren't interested in that. Again, what the Bush crime family was looking for was a reason to invade, reason to start a war in Iraq. Afghanistan was a smokescreen. This president, Obama, I don't think he's that way. I think he believes in the application of power, but for him it's more like firepower. He has no qualms about ordering the assassination of American citizens in a different country. He has no problem using drone aircraft to go after what are considered by this government, this corporate state, to be our enemies. And to use these drone aircraft, these robot aircrafts, to kill them. But as far as massive invasion, no. Iran, where Iran is concerned, if there is any dealing going on about Iran, it's between the U.S. and the Israelis, with the Israelis leading the charge if that ever happens, and the United States providing logistical support of one kind or another. But I don't think you're ever going to see American troops in Iran. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I hope that's true.
I do too. Now, I'm not saying the United States is not going to be involved in some kind of conflict with Iran, Ty. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be U.S. troops that go in there. Ty, I've got to move on. Thank you, sir. And thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it very much. Take care, okay? I have no idea what the hell I just said. I hope it made sense. I don't know. No, about Obama. I just, you know, why bring, what do we have still in Iraq? 30,000, 40,000 American military personnel. You bring them home. If a drawdown in Afghanistan is to begin, I guess it's already begun, hasn't it? I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know how these games are being played out. We had a president, Jack Kennedy, who tried to, I think, I mean, depends on your reading of history, I guess, but who tried to reduce the military footprint of the United States in Southeast Asia, and he had his head blown off for doing it by, and this, again, this is just my opinion, by forces inside this country that did not want that. They didn't want a reduced U.S. military presence in the Far East. And when Jack Kennedy, if in fact he did, who knows anymore? I mean, who knows? But if Kennedy did in fact start the process of trying to reduce military, U.S. military involvement around the globe, that was just absolutely not what the national security state that was just putting itself together in this country wanted. You know, it was 14, 15 years after World War II. We still, even though the Russians were catching up with their nuclear firepower, we still were the dominant force on the planet. You can make an argument that Kennedy forced Khrushchev to back down where it concerned the missile silos that were being built in Cuba. On the other hand, maybe not. We had to give up our missile launching areas in Turkey in exchange, or did we? Who knows? I mean, do you know? Do you know what's going on? I damn sure don't. I do know there was an Operation Northwoods that when Kennedy found out about it, he went ballistic. I don't know anymore. I didn't know back then. When Kennedy had his head blown off in Dallas, and I was, you know, just barely into adulthood, I just stood there like, what is going on? You know, and then to listen to the stories about, well, it was Lee Harvey Oswald, and oops, now he's dead. Oh, it was Jack Ruby. Oops, now he's dead. Oops, 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 oops. You know, and then Bobby Kennedy, and then Martin Luther King. Well, not in that order, but you know, all these assassinations that occurred in the 60s, there was a message being handed to the American people. God damn it. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to figure this out. You just don't. When did Martin Luther King get assassinated? It wasn't when he was talking civil rights. Oh, the darkies want to vote? Sure, go ahead, bring them on. It was when he started identifying the United States for what it was, the most aggressive, violent nation on earth that was hell-bent on subjugating as many people, overtaking as many countries, expropriating as many of these countries' natural resources as possible. King was trying to point something out. King was not some, ooh, let's all sing Kumbaya and get along, whites and blacks. King was making some powerful statements, and they had to kill him for it. Just like they had to kill Bobby Kennedy, and they had to kill Jack Kennedy, and on and on and on. Barack Obama, I have no idea what Barack Obama's about. Before the hour, Jim is in Las Vegas. Jim, sorry I had you on hold for so long.
That's all right, Mike. Man, I really enjoyed the last segment there. Very enlightening.
Good.
Right, and spot on, as Tom Hartman would say.
Yeah, right. Spot on.
Spot on.
Spot on.
But, my question was, as you know, I live out here in Vegas, and I was relatively close to the little... The faux debate, right? And then I saw a group of like 10, 15 protesters walking down. And I was thinking about maybe joining it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, but I was close to work, and I'm in identifiable clothes by work, and I just figured with all the cameras around, you know, I chose not to. Do you think I made a wise career decision?
Do I think you did?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what I think really, Jim, is irrelevant. I mean, everybody has to decide the time and place to make a stand. It might not have been the time and place for you. So, I mean, that's something that you know, only you can make that decision, just like me. There have been many times when I'm second-guessing myself. What the hell am I doing in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains doing this this program when I should be here or there? And you know, every once in a while I talk a good talk, but I also walk the walk. Every once in a while I'll get out and join the movement and, if necessary, commit an act of civil disobedience. I've been arrested. I know what that feels like. I know what it means to put things at risk. You know, I've got a 7-year-old kid. I certainly don't want to wind up in a situation where, you know, some out of control, cop hits me on the head with a truncheon or something, and I lose it for the rest of Molly's life. But you have to make these decisions as you go along. I'm too old to have a 7-year-old, but I do have a 7-year-old, so I've got to do whatever I can to at least give her a toehold to do something. And I know you feel the same way too. You just have to choose your time and your place. And when if you're ready to make a move like that, you'll do it. But it's got to be on your time, Jim. Nobody can tell you, oh, well, it's time to go to the barricades. It may be time to go to the barricades for a lot of people. If it's not time for you, wait till it's your time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So you're basically saying location, location, location.
Yeah, and where you are, you know, inside your head. What's the location inside your head? Not just your location, you know, where you happen to live or where you're walking down the street and you see this madness. It's also where are you inside your own head, and that's pretty important too. Jim, thanks, man. I'm glad you called in. I know you'll work that problem out the way that's good for you. Thanks a lot, pal. Alma is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Alma.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you I so appreciate your program.
Well, thank you.
I've been reading Chris Hedges' book, As the World As It Is.
Right.
And people need to keep getting out there. He says that you keep showing up and it will wear the police down. It will wear people down.
Mm-hmm.
And they will begin to join.
No, I can.
And then the elite won't have any protection.
Right. Well, I agree. I agree with 90% of what Chris Hedges says. The only place we part company is on the religious issue. You know, he's pretty much a religious type person, and I'm not. I met him in Washington. I've spoken at the same events as he's spoken at. I've never sat down and had a conversation with him. I'm in awe of his writing. I think his writing is just astonishing. You know, would that I had that ability, which I don't. Very few people do.
But he is so right on.
He is.
And actually, I don't even relate much to that religious. And that's not what I focus on. I focus on people keeping on.
Yeah, and exactly. His answer is, you know, don't kid yourself that you're going to work with one of these political parties and bring about change. What's going to make change now is massive disruption of the continuing operation of this horrible machine that's grinding all of us into mincemeat. And it can't be done with a few hundred people people in New York and a couple thousand in D.C. and a couple thousand in L.A. and a few hundred in Miami. It can't be done. That's the vanguard. That's the beginning. That's the start. That's the toe in the water, so to speak. But what it's going to take is for literally, and you know, these are not made up figures, literally millions of people, if not tens of millions of people, into the streets with a demand that this madness has got to stop. And the madness is very simply, and Alma, thanks, I appreciate you checking in. The madness is very simply this utter and absolute control over almost every institution in the United States, from our political system to our judiciary to our sports institutions. It's all been taken over by corporate America. All of it. Every single thing. Even religious, you know, which I have no use for. But even that has been corporatized. Our voting system, the way we vote, has been taken over by private corporations. All of it. The military is owned outright by the military-industrial complex. So it has to stop. It has to stop. And until it does stop, there's not going to be any change. We have got to put those millions of people in the street. It has to happen. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. I'm Dave.